Chapter 2. Over a year out from returning from the dead and helping to save the universe, a solid half of their missions are still about dealing with the post-apocalyptic fallout. Sam's not complaining, out loud anyway, because things, demonstrably, could have been a hell of a lot worse. The occasional surprise portal that spits out eldritch monstrosities or other weird shit is a small price to pay for the return of half of the entire universe and the destruction of Thanos. Doctor Strange says it'll all settle down, quote, soon, that it's just a consequence of what Thanos did with this universe's Infinity Stones and how they all used different timelines' Infinity Stones to fix it. Once this universe's Infinity Stones reconstitute themselves, our universe will restabilize, Strange had said, with a faint edge of desperation that suggested the unspoken end of that sentence was, hopefully. Well, nothing's restabilized yet, so the Avengers are on portal duty for the third time this month. So far, nothing's come out of the portal that's hanging in the middle of a once-quiet residential street in the Bronx. It looks creepy as fuck, though. Mostly because it doesn't look like what Sam imagines a portal should look like at all. This is no swirly circle of light, or even an obvious tear in the fabric of their reality. Instead, it's like a portion of the street is rippling with heat haze, and there shouldn't be heat haze on a balmy spring day in May. And a bone-deep sense of wrongness radiates out from it. The normal street is visible behind what their scanners reliably inform them is a portal, and if you toss anything inside the portal's 20-foot diameter, it disappears. And yet, it still doesn't look like a portal. The whole thing is actively difficult to look at, which sucks, because that's exactly what the Avengers are supposed to be doing here. NYFD have evacuated everyone in a 3-block radius, and are standing ready to help evacuate more people if necessary, so the Avengers are hunkered down behind a hastily constructed barricade in the middle of the street, waiting to see if some horrifying monster or alien army appears out of thin air. "You sure you don't want to just send Red Wing in there? Take a look around?" asks Scott. "Hell no, I'm not risking my precious Red Wing on whatever hellscape is in there." "Speaking of hellscapes," says Hope, "are the scans showing us anything new? Barnes, anything from your vantage point?"
"Scans aren't showing anything," reports Natasha from Ops. "Energy levels are starting to drop, though, so maybe this thing will close up soon. I've got Jane Foster crunching the numbers, but she still needs more data before her portal model's accurate." "All clear from up here," says Bucky over the comms, as even and soft-spoken as usual.
If he's having trouble keeping an eye on the eerie portal from his sniper perch on a nearby roof, it isn't apparent in his voice. But then, Bucky's voice basically stays at YouTube ASMR level calm unless he's actively engaged in punching people and or aliens. It's terrible. Wait, now there's an idea, thinks Sam. The PR team has been on their asses lately to seem approachable on social media, and there are only so many TikTok videos Sam is willing to do. But if he could subject Bucky to the indignities of YouTube... Sam's PR and or prank ideas derail when the mid-afternoon light reflects strangely off the heat haze in front of the portal, making Sam's stomach lurch with something almost like motion sickness.
"I don't sense any kind of intelligence," Wanda says. "Maybe nothing will come through this one."
"Doesn't have to be intelligent to cause trouble," mutters Bruce. "Remember the pterodactyls in Atlantic City?" Jesus, Sam wishes he could forget. He'd never wanted to reenact Jurassic Park. And he'd especially never wanted to share the skies with enormous pterodactyls.
"Please, can we stop jinxing this whole situation? It's bad enough that just looking at that thing is making me queasy," pleads Sam.
"Unfocus your eyes,"
suggests Bucky.
"Motion's the main thing we gotta watch for, anyway."
The comms channel fills with the team's idle, slightly nervy chatter, as they all keep an eye on the wavering air in front of the portal. There's a brief false alarm when they see a flash of light, but nothing comes out, not according to their eyes or their scanners. After a couple of hours of nothing, Sam's starting to hope something does come out of the portal just to relieve the boredom. Sam really regrets that thought when things do, in fact, start to come out of the portal. He regrets it even more when he sees that the things coming out of the portal are weird. Really weird.
They look kind of crystalline, and they're moving in ways Sam's eyes aren't happy about processing. They look a lot like those time-lapse videos of ice crystals forming, only they're person-sized, and the crystals keep shifting and growing as if to the beat of some unheard pulse. "Wanda, you getting anything from these beings?" asks Sam, because as weird as they look, maybe they're harmless and curious. After all, not all aliens are murderous and mean. The Skrull are pretty chill, disquieting shape-shifting ability aside. Wanda sends a red tendril of power out toward the crystalline beings, and the light refracts strangely once it reaches them, making Wanda wince. The beings keep advancing out of the portal until there are at least a dozen of them, which is Sam's cue to pull out the shield. "Maybe they're silicone-based life forms," suggests Hope, "or something else that would form in regular crystals like that." "Their minds are a little bit like Vision's," murmurs Wanda. "But, if Vision had the mental capacity of a cockroach?"
"So, do I need to shoot them, or are we gently shooing them back into the portal?" asks Bucky.
One of the crystalline beings suddenly grows a decidedly spiky and sharp-looking limb, and promptly begins to hack away at a nearby car. "Yeah, no, Sam's gonna call this one. Shoot them if they make a move towards us. Everyone else, keep the perimeter secure and tighten it in. We're gonna try and herd them back through the portal. And if that doesn't work, squash them like cockroaches."
The team begins to move into formation to do just that, and Bucky hums dubiously over the comms.
"I'm kind of concerned about ricochets here," he says. "Cap, get your shield up. Everyone else, get to cover."
And all right, that's a fair point. Sam positions himself behind the shield, and the others get behind the makeshift barricade. Bucky fires, just a couple of warning shots. The first bullet does, in fact, ping off of one of the crystalline beings, but the second lands in one of its limbs, cracking it like a mirror. "So, okay, no guns from close range," says Sam. "Stick with trying to smash him and herd him back into that portal. Barnes, only shoot if one of us is in trouble."
"Reading suggests the portal's going to close up soon, and I've got War Machine and Iron Man on standby in case things go south,"
says Natasha.
Things don't go south, thankfully. Fighting the crystalline robot things isn't fun, exactly. Wanda's right, they're at about cockroach level of intelligence and nuisance, which, given the Avengers scale of alien threats, goes from friendly and harmless to full-on genocidal. Cockroach is pretty solidly on the more benign end of the scale. Mostly they just have to whack at the things while pushing them back towards and through the portal. Sam's lucky to have the shield for this part. The vibranium absorbs the rattling force of the aliens' blows, and he can use it to shove the aliens back towards the portal. Whenever one of the aliens gets a little too close with their huge and spiky limbs, a shot from Bucky rings out, cracking or shattering the limb, and soon enough, the team herds all of the aliens through. "Just like sweeping spiders out of the garage," Scott declares cheerfully.
"Weird comparison, but okay," says Sam, then continues, "All right, team, let's keep a tight perimeter and push back any new ones that come through."
Before he can finish his order, the portal dissipates. There's no audible sound or flash of light or anything, just the quiet disappearance of that odd heat haze, and yet Sam's certain the portal's gone. Natasha confirms it.
"Portal's gone based on the readings here," she reports. "Do you have visual?"
"It wasn't exactly visible before," says Hope, while Scott grabs a broken-off piece of the alien crystal off the ground and tosses it where the portal had been. It doesn't disappear, just lands on the asphalt with a clatter.
"Portal's gone," Scott confirms.
Sam breathes a sigh of relief. He really hadn't been looking forward to keeping an eye on the damn thing for the whole damn day, or longer.
"Good," he says. "Okay, let's do a full sweep inside the perimeter, make sure there aren't any stragglers or anything. Red Wing and I will go by air, everyone else pick a quadrant and work through it. Barnes, you sit tight and keep an eye on where the portal was, just in case."
A chorus of agreement goes out over their comms, and Sam sends Red Wing on up before following him. He spends most of his flight paying attention to the readings from Red Wing, keeping an eye out for any odd energy signatures or heat spots, and after an hour or so, he gives the all clear as he glides back towards their original staging area.
"All clear down here too, Cap,"
reports Hope, and she's echoed by Bruce, Scott, and Wanda.
"Barnes?" asks Sam. "You still on that roof?"
There's silence over the comms for long seconds, and just as Sam banks left towards Bucky's last known location, Bucky answers.
"Yeah, all clear from up here. Just give me a few minutes," he says, sounding distracted.
And what the hell is that humming, buzzing noise coming over the comms? Yeah, Sam's gonna do a flyover. Given Bucky's penchant for understatement, he may well be dealing with some fresh alien hell that he thinks is no big deal. When Sam lands on the roof of the apartment building that served as Bucky's sniper perch for the mission, he sees Bucky doing something with a crate, his movements careful and slow. "Please don't tell me you have some horribly dangerous alien that escaped from the portal in there," Sam says and grips the shield, ready to throw it. "Nah, just need to get the swarm of bees." "What? What are you... Bees? Leave them alone? That can't be safe!" Now that Sam's stepped closer, he can see the buzzing mass of bees that are currently surrounding a bit of trellis that must have been part of someone's rooftop garden once. Sam's not a huge insect fan, so it looks kind of creepy, though he supposes the humming buzz of the bees doesn't sound angry or anything. Bucky casts a chiding and disappointed look over at Sam. "They're just honeybees. I spotted a beekeeper's hive on the next roof over. I think it's probably theirs, or at least they'll know what to do with them. It's the right season for swarms, and if we don't get these little guys to a new hive, they'll starve, and the whole hive will die." Before Sam can tell him to leave this to animal control or whoever to deal with, Bucky gently maneuvers the crate towards the swarming bees, setting it down under the trellis. "Come on," Bucky coaxes softly. Then he gives the trellis a few careful shakes, knocking the bees loose and into the box. Sam startles, ready to make a run for it in case the bees go on the attack. But no, they just crawl happily into and all over the crate. There are a few dozen stragglers still clinging to the trellis, and with slow and impossibly gentle sweeps of his vibranium arm, Bucky brushes them into the crate too. A few bees are still hanging onto his arm, maybe attracted by the gleam of the prosthetic's gold seams, and he nudges them into the crate with his right hand. "There you go," he murmurs, and his eyes crinkle up with his softest smile. He looks back up at Sam, seemingly unbothered by the box of wriggling bees at his feet. "Can I borrow the shield? I need a lid for this crate to make sure they all stay in here." Sam also wants the bees to stay in the damn crate, so he tosses the shield over, and Bucky catches it easily before setting it very carefully on top.
"Since when do you know how to handle swarms of bees?" demands Sam, because seriously, what the hell? How many baffling areas of competency does Bucky have? How can he possibly know about bees and the appropriate procedures for handling a swarm of them?
"Since I lived on a farm for a couple of years, the village had a couple of hives. I helped look after them," says Bucky, entirely reasonably, and yet Sam's baffled fury remains. "Hey, can you fly us to the next roof over?"
"By us, you mean you and your whole ass box of buzzin' bees."
"Yeah," says Bucky, and has the gall to look at Sam like he's crazy for questioning this request.
No?
And no, oh no, Sam cannot handle the big blue eyes of sad he's getting from Bucky right now. The man is in full tack gear, looking every inch the Winter Soldier, except for the tragic puppy eyes. And the cognitive dissonance is making Sam dizzy, his heart pumping inappropriately faster.
"Sam, saving the bees is really important," says Bucky, with such soft-spoken sincerity that Sam wildly suspects Bucky of fucking with him.
"Bees are crucial to the ecosystem, and their populations are really suffering on account of colony collapse."
"Oh my God," interjects Sam, but Bucky continues, undaunted.
"And it's really important to relocate them into a hive before their store of nectar runs out."
"I am not carrying you and a crate full of bees. They don't allow you to have bees in here."
The reference, naturally, goes right over Bucky's head. He frowns.
"In where? We're on a roof. Urban beekeeping is legal in every borough in New York."
How does Bucky know that? How? Does he have a secret hive of bees? Honestly, Sam wouldn't put it past him. Bucky lives in the same building as Steve, and their neighborhood is a weird mix of hippie and hipstery. Okay, that's not what I... And all right, now Bucky is looking legitimately upset, and Sam cannot handle it. Somewhere in Brooklyn, in some support group meeting, Steve is suddenly feeling disappointed in Sam, and he doesn't know why. And Sam really strives to avoid disappointing Steve. Apparently, the power of Steve's "I'm disappointed in you" face is not, in fact, contingent on him being Captain America.
Are you really going to let these innocent bees and their queen die? There's the slightest hint of a quaver in Bucky's voice now, his eyes too big and pleading, and Sam winces. He's not a monster, okay? He's just understandably wary about flying with Bucky and a box of bees. Jesus Christ, fine, fine. I cannot believe that you're some kind of bee whisperer on top of everything else. Bucky's face scrunches up in a ridiculously dumb expression of confusion. What do you mean, everything else? A whole montage of Bucky's hypercompetence plays out in fast forward in Sam's head. Not just Bucky being very good at violence and shooting things and shield tossing, but also the knowing every language thing. That time he brought some seriously delicious homemade bread and pie to the Avengers potluck. Him fixing his own damn prosthetic arm. Every time he casually done some serious math in his head and busted out the answer before Sam. The way he's a genuinely patient and good teacher to the Spider Kid and assorted other teen superheroes they've picked up. The way he's been able to operate literally every single vehicle or aircraft they've ever run into. A couple of pigeons alight on the now bee-free trellis. They blink at Sam, looking vaguely judgmental. One of them coos, and, okay, it definitely sounds judgy. Something in Sam snaps.
Nothing. It's fine. You got bee skills. I got bird skills.
Okay. Is this some kind of birds and the bees metaphor?
What? No. Why would... How would that even... I don't know, says Bucky, blushing now.
No, it's not about the birds and the bees. I mean, me and birds. We understand each other.
Bucky narrows his eyes. Like, figuratively or...
Literally.
Bucky's clearly about to ask some more questions about Sam's psychotic break and or total lie when Scott pings them on comms.
We've got a lady here who's really insistent on getting past the perimeter. Something about bees? Ma'am, they don't allow you to have bees in here.
Faintly, Sam can hear a woman saying,
But my hive, they're swarming, and if I don't get them...
Tell her I've got them, says Bucky. We'll be down in a few.
Uh-huh. You, me, and a few thousand bees, mutters Sam.
The short trip from the roof down to the ground is very awkward, what with Sam having to grip Bucky under his armpits while Bucky holds the box of bees. At least Bucky's cut his hair short now, so Sam doesn't have to keep spitting out strands of Bucky's too thick and soft hair, and instead just gets a nose full of whatever fancy hair care products he persists in using. Awkward position or no, they all land light as a damn feather, the bees seemingly unbothered by either the flight or the landing. The team has regrouped at their original staging area, where assorted first responders are now bustling around, getting ready to let the evacuated residents back in. There's a news van parked a few blocks away, and Sam really hopes they didn't just get a clear shot of his decidedly ungraceful flight with Bucky and bees.
Really feel like you ought to be the one dealing with this whole situation, Wasp, Sam says, and Hope just grins and shakes her head.
Yeah, no, my code name is not at all literal. I don't have insect powers. Also, wasps are not bees.
We rescue bees now? Asks Wanda with a bemused and slightly indulgent smile.
Bees are important, says Scott, leading a civilian towards them, like in general, and also to this particular lady specifically.
My bees! Exclaims a youngish-looking brown-skinned woman, whose mass of curly hair is only barely held back by a headband. She rushes forward to peer at the crate, still covered with a shield. I can't believe you saved them! You got them all? You didn't get stung or swarmed or anything?
Yes, ma'am, this is the whole swarm, and they've all been perfectly well-behaved, Bucky tells her, and she sighs in relief, even her curls seeming to bounce happily.
Was that your hive I saw on the next roof over?
It is, yeah. I wasn't sure they'd swarm, and I really didn't think they'd head over to the next roof, but I had a webcam by the hive to keep an eye on them, and then we had to evacuate, and I was so worried they'd be smushed by aliens or something.
Bucky smiles at her reassuringly. Well, they're all fine, ma'am. Did you need help getting them back up to your roof?
She beams at Bucky, and Sam swears he sees literal stars in her eyes. Ugh. Sam has saved actual babies and not gotten this kind of reception.
Could you? There's an elevator, but it's kind of too cramped, and there's a lot of stairs.
I can handle some stairs, Bucky tells her, and her smile brightens even further before she turns to lead Bucky into her building, chatting all the way.
Bees, mutters Sam as Bucky walks away. Goddamn swarm of bees, and the man knows what to do. It's not right.
Wanda's eyebrows shoot up. I wasn't aware beekeeping was some sort of forbidden knowledge, she says slowly. Before Sam can clarify, not that he's entirely sure how or what he's going to clarify, Scott takes the opportunity to deliver a mini lecture about bees, which ends up being surprisingly interesting. Sam only mocks him a little for it because Scott's enthusiasm is pretty genuine, and also Hope will absolutely punch him if he's mean to Scott. Bucky returns soon after, the bee lady still at his side.
And I'll send you some of the hive's honey, she's saying, and Bucky gives her a bashful smile and a shake of his head.
Oh, you don't have to, ma'am.
I insist. You saved this beehive. You definitely deserve first pick of its honey.
The metaphorical and the literal honey, I'm guessing, murmurs Hope as she unsuccessfully fights a grin. Bucky clearly gives up on any more polite demurs, and then there's a whole polite and sincere exchange of thank yous and your welcomes, until finally the bee lady leaves, but not before pressing a post-it into Bucky's hand.
Call me, or text me, or whatever, if you're interested in setting up your own hive, or if you want to talk about community gardens some more, or, you know, anything.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
With one last brilliant smile, bee lady turns and returns to her apartment building, her hair bouncing happily the whole way. Once she's out of earshot, Hope stops bothering to try to hide her shit-eating grin and says, "Aw, she was flirting with you, Barnes."
"What? No, we were just talking about bees and gardening, and she wasn't flirting."
She was flirting,
says the entire rest of the team in unison, and Bucky blushes bright pink.
"Come on, you can't be surprised," snaps Sam, and Bucky's shoulders hunch up.
"Shockingly enough, no one really flirts with the ex-assassin amputee who was recently a fugitive. So yeah, I'm a little surprised."
Which is some bullshit, because Sam has witnessed no fewer than 24 people flirt with Bucky while he's on the job. And that's just the people who had the guts to talk to him. It doesn't include all the lusty looks. And God knows how many people have thrown themselves at him when he's off the job. Bucky has to have noticed. Sam's about to say as much, but Wanda gets there first.
"You're a catch, Bucky Barnes," says Wanda, winding her arm through his as they all head back towards the Quinjet, and all the tension in Bucky disappears as he smiles down at her. Bucky indulges Wanda like she's his baby sister, and hell, they even look like they could be siblings. "You should call her back, she was cute."
The rest of the team agrees, and Sam's this close to instituting a new Avengers rule right here and now about no fraternization with civilians they save, because surely there's some kind of inappropriate power imbalance or sexual harassment or something there. But then the NYFD captain in charge of the evacuations calls him over, which is good, because Sam's not sure he wants to be the guy who harshes the current team banter buzz with rulemaking. And also, he needs to figure out if he's going to commit to his whole "I can talk to birds" thing.
Debrief back at Avengers Tower goes quickly, what with there not being much to report beyond portal open, things came out, we handled the things, portal closed. Sam writes up an after-action report and sends it off with plenty of time to spare to get to the weekly dinner at Steve's place in Brooklyn. The night of the weekly dinner shifts around as needed to accommodate missions and schedules, but barring any urgent longer missions, it's pretty non-negotiable. Once a week, Sam, Steve, Natasha, and Bucky have a family dinner together at Steve's place. Wanda comes too sometimes, if she's not with Vision or at the Bartons, and sometimes Natasha brings Sharon or Maria along. Hell, even Shuri drops in if she's in the States. It's usually a highlight of Sam's week. A stable point in a world that's still so changed, Sam hardly recognizes it sometimes. This week, Sam's wondering if he can beg off without making anyone worry. He's feeling touchy and out of sorts, despite how well today's mission had gone, and he's not looking forward to the whole train ride with Bucky because he'll have to commit one way or another to this whole bird-talking thing. He should just say it was a joke, right?
or an exaggeration. And, God, what if Bucky brings it up during dinner? Maybe if he just says he's not up to schlepping all the way back to his place in Harlem after dinner? Bucky knocks lightly on the doorframe of Sam's official Avengers office space. Hey, you ready to go? He asks. He's changed out of his uniform, and, like it nearly always does these days, the sight gives Sam a little jolt. It's the new short haircut, he thinks, and the stylish clothes. Bucky still can and does dress to disappear sometimes, but nowadays, more often than not, he doesn't. He wears tight pants and jeans that show off his long legs, and shirts that are just a little bit nicer and more adventurous than the average t-shirt or button-down. Today he's wearing a floral print shirt that he's somehow managing to make look edgy, with a slim-cut leather jacket, and he looks disconcertingly modern and new, nothing like the Winter Soldier or any other version of Bucky Barnes that Sam has known. New, but good. Real good. It's annoying. Like, way to rub it in. Oh, I'm so confident and hot. Look at me. Well, Sam's looking, and it's distracting. Sam? Prompts Bucky, and he startles. Yeah, sorry. Let me just grab my stuff. They take the subway, since it's faster, and as usual, their fellow New Yorkers pay them no mind. It's an unspoken rule. No matter how famous you are, you don't get bothered on the subway. Not beyond the occasional smile or furtive photo, anyway, and tonight's no exception in their moderately crowded car.
So, what did you mean when you said you had bird skills earlier? Asks Bucky, because I thought you said something about talking to birds, but maybe the bees buzzing was messing with my hearing.
Here it is, an opportunity to walk back his dumbass, wildly inaccurate claim about being able to talk to birds. Because while Sam really likes birds, and actually knows a lot about them, he had an intense birding phase before he enlisted, he still can't talk to them. Not in any mutually intelligible way, anyway. And like, Sam's aware that it's not necessarily cool to be the Falcon and also be weirdly into birds. What's cool is being able to goddamn fly.
But what if Sam could talk to birds? What if Sam could be something a little more than just your average unenhanced human? Nothing flashy, nothing obvious, just what if Sam has hidden depths and random weird skills too?
No, you heard right, says Sam.
There's a deeply skeptical silence from Bucky's direction.
Is it really so unbelievable that I have a super special superpower you don't know about? Because it's not like I knew about you and your whole bee thing. I got skills and shit too, you know.
Right, but that's not like a superpower. That's just farm stuff. And I know you've got skills. I just didn't know talking to birds was one of them. None of the others ever mentioned it.
God. When Natasha catches wind of this lie, she will literally never let him live it down.
Yeah, I've kept it on the down low. It just doesn't come up all that often, you know?
Okay, says Bucky slowly, and while there's some suspicion in the furrow of his forehead, he now seems willing to roll with this new knowledge.
What do birds even talk about?
Nothing that interesting, Sam says. Because there's only so far he's willing to commit to this little white lie. Sam's not delusional, okay? Mostly it's just about food and mating rituals, I guess. I learned to tune it out.
That's cool.
They sit together in silence for two stops. Sam fidgets.
You're seriously just gonna roll with this? Like, no big deal?
We're on a team with two guys who call themselves Spider-Man and Ant-Man. We've met a talking raccoon, and a talking tree.
Bucky gives Sam a sidelong look, and his lips curve up a fractional amount that might just be in Sam's imagination.
Like you said that one time, everybody's got a gimmick.
They can't talk to insects, though.
Bucky shrugs, if you say so.
Sam's really not sure what reaction he expected or wanted out of Bucky, but this Zen acceptance sure as hell isn't it. It is, somehow, more infuriating than outright disbelief would be. Does Bucky not even care?
Enough about me, says Sam. Are you going to text Bee Lady? You two seem to really hit it off. Bucky hunches his shoulders, sinking lower into his seat. She was just grateful, he mutters.
No, she was into you, because you're a hot superhero who goes out of his way to save innocent bees. Come on, man, there's humility, and then there's being a dumbass, and you're being a dumbass.
Bucky blinks over at him, then tilts his head as if confused.
You think I'm hot?
Sam scoffs. I'm just stating an objective fact. If you like her, you should text her.
Or are you really going to try and tell me you're good at everything but flirting?
Bucky's mouth opens, then closes, and his forehead furrows into a frankly adorable expression of bewilderment as he looks over at Sam.
I can't tell if that's an insult or not, he says.
Sam's not really sure either, if he's being honest. Whatever, he says, and is saved from having to say anything else when they arrive at their stop. When he risks a glance over at Bucky as they step out onto the platform, though, there's a thoughtful, considering kind of expression on his face, and for a moment, Sam thinks that expression is more dangerous by far than Bucky's resting murder face. After about 15 minutes at Steve's place, Sam realizes it would have been dumb to skip out. The familiar routine and comfort of dinner at Steve's almost makes Sam forget all about today's mission and his own weird feelings. The sight of Nat and Steve so relaxed and at ease, and the solid safety of knowing none of them are on the run or in danger, are more relaxing than the glass of wine Sam has with dinner. It's good to catch up with Steve and Natasha, too. They're both in and out of the tower pretty often, Nat in ops, and Steve for consulting and training, but after 2 years living practically in each other's pockets, Sam still feels like he barely sees them. Most of his non-Avengers interaction with Natasha comes in the form of texts nowadays, though they do manage to grab lunch together a few times a month. Steve spends most of his time doing volunteer work with counseling and rebuilding, and he's taking art classes, and every time Sam sees him, he's pleasantly shocked by how good peace looks on Steve. Also by how much Steve's cooking has improved. Tonight's chicken pot pie is just the kind of hearty, stick-to-your-ribs kind of comforting meal Sam hadn't even known he was craving. Which is all to say, Sam's feeling downright loose and easy by the time the conversation comes around to today's mission.
Mission today went okay, right? Asks Steve.
And for all that Sam and Bucky are sitting right in front of him, safe and sound, Sam gets that Steve needs more reassurance than that. He usually does nowadays, and Sam and Bucky quietly make sure he has it. Sam rushes to answer Steve before Bucky can say anything about Sam's non-existent bird-talking superpower.
Yeah, it was good. Nothing too tough. Another day, another portal. Hell, we even rescued some bees.
I rescued some bees, says Bucky. What, did you stop a beehive from getting squished or shot or something? Asks Natasha.
Nah, Bucky here was on Overwatch when he found a swarm of bees and safely relocated them, much to the relief of one very grateful, very flirty civilian urban beekeeper. Did you text her yet, by the way?
Bucky ducks his head and pokes at a stray pea on his plate with his fork. The whole ducking his head move really doesn't work so well now that he's cut his hair. There's nowhere for him to hide the faint pink staining his cheeks or the shy fan of his lashes.
No, he says. Then, it wasn't a big deal. Just wanted to make sure the bees were safe, in case no one could get to them in time. A swarm can die if they run out of nectar before finding a new hive.
How do you relocate a swarm of bees? Wonders Natasha, and Bucky shrugs.
It's not really complicated. You just find a box or something and knock them into it, then get them settled in a new hive. The bees do all the work, really.
Well, it sounds easy now that Barnes has put it like that. And yet, Sam still knows he'd never have managed it if it had been up to him.
Sometimes you're real Shelbyville, you know that, Barnes? Says Steve with a happy grin, and Bucky scowls.
Judging by the scuffle Sam can hear under the table, he and Steve are kicking each other like children.
Shut up, no I'm not, says Bucky.
Shelbyville? Asks Sam.
Indiana. Buck's folks on his dad's side are from there. They had a farm.
Visited over summers a few times. But that's not how I know about the bees. I lived on a damn farm in Wakanda, is all.
Like I said, your Shelbyville roots are showing.
Yeah, yeah, laugh it up, Mr. Goats intimidate me.
What? That's not... I never said that. Goats do not intimidate me.
Sam grins and sits back in his chair with his glass of wine, ready to appreciate the Steve and Bucky show, which is always good for learning some choice, new, hilarious, and embarrassing shit about both of them. Natasha looks over at him, and they share an indulgent smile before she tips her own wine glass toward him in a silent toast that he returns with a grin. Had he really been thinking of skipping this? With the good meal, the wine, and the company warming him, the thought seems dumb and embarrassing. This right here is exactly where Sam's supposed to be right now. A couple days later, Steve joins Sam on his morning run. Their runs together are no longer crack-of-dawn affairs like when they'd first met. Instead, Sam usually gets in a good run in Midtown near the tower before he heads in for the morning briefing. And sometimes Steve joins him if he's in Manhattan for an early meeting. Steve even does Sam the courtesy of only lapping him a couple of times before actually jogging along with him. They chat idly as they run about how the Avengers are doing, how Steve's liking his art classes, the things that still trip Sam up about post-post-apocalyptic life. When they pause for a water break, it hits Sam with vertiginous, displacing force. He and Steve have practically swapped lives. Now Steve's a counselor who's finally put the war behind him, and Sam's Captain America, a little adrift in a world that's a hell of a lot different than the one he'd known. Well, Sam's more well-adjusted than Steve had been, Sam hopes. He's only missed 5 years, after all, and he likes to think he has some self-awareness. His epiphany must show on his face, because Steve glances at him with concern. All right, Sam?
Yeah, says Sam. Yeah, I'm good. I was just thinking, remember when we first met, running on the mall?
Steve nods.
We've kind of swapped places since then. It kind of surprised me realizing that.
Steve laughs, both rueful and wondering.
Yeah, I guess we have, haven't we? You're handling things much better than I ever did, though. And you're a better cap, too.
Aw, Steve, no. Sam starts, but Steve cuts him off with a shake of his head.
Your heart's in it, Sam. I don't think mine was. Not since coming out of the ice, Steve admits. Can't exactly blame you for that, especially after S.H.I.E.L.D. turned out to be half Hydra, Sam says, and Steve shrugs. I'm just glad you're not as, I don't know, isolated as I was, and I'm really glad you've got Bucky to watch your back, and that he's got you.
Yeah, me too, says Sam. Bucky's a good partner, even if he considers rescuing some bees to be mission critical.
Hey now, bees are important for the ecosystem and all.
Yeah, I know, but seriously, he's got beekeeping skills on top of everything else?
Sam stifles a wince then, because he hadn't quite meant to say that, and he's not sure he wants to complain to Steve about his best friend being too competent. Sam's aware it's a dumb complaint to have. But to Sam's surprise, Steve groans.
Oh, right? He's good at basically everything. It's so obnoxious.
Oh, thank God. Sam's not just crazy. Someone else has noticed that Bucky is too competent, and that it is a problem.
Has it always been like this? Sam asks, because maybe this is just a super soldier serum, Hydra training thing. He's not sure that'll make it easier to deal with Bucky's annoying omnicompetence, but at least it would be an explanation beyond, yeah, no, he's just that good.
Steve scowls, pretty much. Sometime him thinking it's not a big deal is more annoying than him getting all vain about it. But ever since we were kids, Buck's always been top of the class. Good at sports, good at dancing, great at his jobs. Good at basically everything he tried.
Steve shakes his head, smiling a little now, and continues. I mean, he's not amazing at everything, I know that. He's no artist, that's for sure. And he's awful at gin rummy, and actually got a C in high school chemistry. Anyway, most things come easy to Bucky, and they always have. I used to get so jealous of him sometimes.
Really? What made you stop?
Oh, getting the serum. And the war. Working together with Buck and the Howleys. Steve says breezily, which is not the kind of answer Sam had been hoping for. Didn't need to have nearly as big a chip on my shoulder when I could finally keep up with him properly, and we both had bigger things to worry about.
Yeah, of course, Sam says. All right, water and heart-to-heart break over. I gotta get back to the tower before I miss morning briefing.
If Sam were a better person, this wouldn't bug him so much.
So what? His partner has superpowers and is also just, like, good at everything, from sniping to beekeeping. It's fine. It's great. It only makes their team stronger. Sam's not jealous. After all, he knows the terrible price Bucky's paid for his superpowers, knows that Bucky never asked for or wanted them. Sam wouldn't want them either, doesn't want them. And if Bucky's just, whatever, one of those people who's naturally talented at many things, while also being handsome and kind, that's fine. Sam can't hold it against him too much. Especially not when Bucky's not an asshole about it. He's not competent and talented despite Sam. Plus, it's not like Sam doesn't have plenty of his own skills. But it'd be nice if Sam could just have one thing, you know, one thing that isn't about the tech he uses, or the shield he's been given. If that one thing has to be Sam's little fib about being able to talk to birds, well, whatever. It's not even a lie, really, when it comes down to it. Sam can talk to birds. Birds can caw and sing and chirp and screech back. Whether there's mutual understanding there, well, who knows. There's some, at least. Sam has a lot of bird knowledge, more than Bucky's bee knowledge, even. So, yeah, he's gonna commit to this. It's just Sam's luck that after he's worked himself up about committing to his talking to birds superpower lie, it doesn't even come up. Sam had braced himself for Bucky spreading it around, which would necessitate a whole embarrassing escalation or admission. But Bucky does no such thing, of course. The man's not exactly a gossip, and naturally he's conscientious enough to not go spreading news of Sam's secret superpower around after Sam told him he keeps it on the down low. There's also, Sam supposes, the possibility that Bucky just doesn't care. Sam's not really willing to entertain that particular possibility, though. He'll just settle for being relieved he hasn't gotten any texts from Steve and Natasha about it, because this lie won't last 10 seconds if Natasha hears about it. The upshot of the whole situation is that Sam ends up paying a lot more attention to all the birds he sees. Sam's eye has always been caught by the flight of birds, ever since he was little. Sam used to be equally enraptured by everything from the fluttering flight of chubby little sparrows to the wheeling and graceful arcs of stately hawks. From the ages of 4 to 7, a worryingly long stretch of time, according to his older sister Sarah, Sam's answer to the question of, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" had been, "A bird." "Oh, honey, you can't be a bird when you grow up," adults would tell him. "Did you mean pilot?" But no, Sam had meant bird, and all those condescending adults who told him that wasn't possible could suck it. Because Sam is the Falcon and Captain America now, and he can goddamn fly, with wings, like a bird. Talking to birds really isn't that out there, in comparison. So he pays more attention to birds over the next few days, watching them the way he used to. Pigeons are still boring as fuck, for the most part. They coo and peck at the ground and poop everywhere, and Sam can't imagine they'd have much of anything interesting to say. Crows, though. Sam figures crows have got to have all the good gossip and jokes. They're playful assholes, smart enough to play tricks and remember people. His great-aunt had befriended some crows once, feeding them crumbs and leftovers in her garden, and after a while, they downright courted her, leaving her little gifts of shiny things, mostly sparkly trash. But once they'd brought her a ring, someone's lost engagement ring, most likely. Great-Aunt Marla had laughed and laughed, delighted. "Why, they're better beaux than any husband I've ever had." Sam's liked crows ever since. He thinks there are more crows in the city now, though it's hard to tell, amid the enormous flocks of starlings. In ancient times, people used to think you could tell the future based on the flight of birds, and looking at the flowing masses of wheeling and diving starlings, Sam can well believe it. There do seem to be signs and symbols in the murmuration's graceful mass movement, with every collective sweep of the flock, only just outside of his understanding. It's like he's a kid again, his eyes always on the skies, when he sees the robins and sparrows, the wheeling red-tailed hawks, the tiny but fierce kestrels. He tunes his ears to sift out the noise of the city's ever-present mechanical and human life, and listens instead to the sparrow songs and the crows' caws, the hoots of the owls at dusk.
All the knowledge he'd filed away in his mind as irrelevant to his current life resurfaces. Bird facts about migration patterns and diets and mating rituals. Well, maybe all this knowledge isn't irrelevant. Maybe Sam doesn't actually have a bird-related superpower. Maybe it won't do much to help him keep up with his superpowered partner. But Sam has some know-how, and he's determined to put it to use. Eventually, Bucky does notice Sam's preoccupation with New York's avian life, and so does the rest of the team. They're following up on reports of monsters in Central Park. Probably nothing, but worrying enough that the Avengers have been called in just in case. Bruce and Hope are talking to the cops, and Scott and Bucky are poking around, but Sam's got his eyes on the birds. A couple of ravens, the ring-tailed gulls in leisurely flight, and of course the ever-present pigeons and sparrows and starlings. "Well?" murmurs Bucky, and Sam jumps. Jesus, he still moves like a ghost. Sam hadn't hurt him at all, and yet now he's right beside Sam. What do the birds say? Bucky's tone is even, and when Sam looks over at him, his expression is as solemn as usual. In the bright sunlight of a cloudless morning in the park, his eyes are pale and almost glowing, like polished sea glass catching the light on a sunny beach. There's maybe the slightest hint of curiosity and amusement in the fractional tilt of his lips, but his question seems to be serious, and Sam has committed to this whole secret superpower fiction, so he figures he ought to give Bucky an actual answer. Lucky for Sam, he doesn't need to know the language of the birds to know what the birds are saying in a general sense, because they're all unbothered, flying and paddling and pottering around, undeterred from their usual routines. If there really was any kind of monster in this park, the birds would be long gone. That the only monstrous things that have passed through the park recently were some dogs that chased the ducks. This one's a bust, Bucky. Bucky nods. Yeah, no one expected tracks either, so I guess you could say we're on a wild goose chase. Sam stares at Bucky, who's still looking calm and nearly somber, his usual expression on the job, and not at all like he's just made a truly terrible joke. Sam narrows his eyes, and Bucky just blinks back at him, innocent and unbothered. Is he fucking with Sam? Sam really can't tell. Whatever, Sam's not going to dignify this with a reaction. So, what's this awkward silence about? Asks Scott when he comes over. Bucky's terrible dad joke, says Sam, and Bucky finally breaks, grinning. It takes all of Sam's effort not to grin back. There's just something too damn infectious about Bucky's relatively rare smiles. Think we can wrap this one up. I'm about 90% sure there are no monsters here, unless you found something. Scott shakes his head. Nothing but litter. What's got you so sure? Is this like cool wilderness tracking knowledge, or... Sam asks the birds, says Bucky. Okay, says Scott slowly. You can, do that? For a brief moment, Sam contemplates coming clean. Ha ha, it was just a joke. Definitely can't talk to birds. That would be wild if I could talk to birds and hadn't mentioned it by now. The moment passes when he locks eyes with Bucky, who's still grinning a little, and whose eyes have now taken on a glint of challenge. Which is rude as hell, because how does he know Sam's not telling the truth? Honestly, how dare he not fully accept Sam's fluency in the language of birds? Go big or go home, Wilson, Sam tells himself. Yes, yes, I can, Sam says. Wait, for real? Asks Scott, and Sam nods, still maintaining eye contact with Bucky. Bucky raises his eyebrows just enough for Sam to get the message of polite disbelief. Oh, it is on. Scott, of course, immediately informs the rest of the Avengers, and soon they're crowding around him, asking for bird talk details, which is fine, because Sam is going to sell the shit out of this little white lie. Why are seagulls like this? Demands Hope. Is the literal sea monster we're dealing with not enough right now? Do the seagulls also have to be our enemies? Cap, what is the deal with the seagulls? I can't really hear him from here, says Sam, and Hope turns to look at him in disbelief, because the sound of the seagulls braying and cawing is pretty damn loud, even from hundreds of yards away. I mean, I can't make anything out. We can't hurt them, they're just scared, says Wanda as she tries to maneuver a waterspout she's pulling out of the sea around what looks like hundreds of frantic seagulls swarming and screeching in one cacophonous mass around the thrashing monster churning the ocean waters. This week's portal has dumped some manner of kraken into the ocean off the coast of Nag's Head, when the whole damn beach is packed with tourists and partiers. Sam had really hoped the Coast Guard could take care of it, but sea monsters from another realm aren't part of their charter or whatever. Ugh, coasties. Well, the former Air Force and former Army can handle it if they can't. And okay, whatever, the Coast Guard is saving the boats that are in trouble in the now choppy waters of the Sound. They're just not quite the aquatic support the Avengers need right now. Wanda's improvised waterspouts are keeping the Kraken away from the boats and the beach for now, but that distraction isn't going to last much longer. The Avengers are really going to have to do something more than survey the scene from the relative safety of the beach, soon.
The seagulls don't exactly sound scared to me, Bruce says. Also, I am really not confident enough in my swimming and aquatic combat abilities to go after that thing. Maybe if Scott goes big?
Sam looks out at the chaos of churning ocean and flailing tentacles out in the Sound, and wonders if there's any way to end this other than turning the Kraken into sashimi. And what the hell are all those seagulls doing, anyway? They should be long gone with all this chaos going on, or at least they should be off pillaging the abandoned portions of the beach for food left behind by the evacuated beachgoers. Not swarming around and above the Kraken in such a thick throng that the sky beyond them is barely visible.
I think we've got too many civilians around for Giant Scott to do his thing, Sam says, visions of boats capsizing running through his head. Barnes, can you get some shots in from here?
Unless you want to see a lot of seagulls turn into pink mist, I don't have enough of a clear shot, reports Bucky. And if it's like an octopus, then it's got a brain in each of its arms. I don't think there's any shot that could take it out of commission all at once. Any violent death throes, and those boats out there are in the danger zone.
Thank you for that octopus fact, Sam says, because, of course, Bucky also knows random facts about marine wildlife. Any chance we can get it back through the portal? He asks,
though as he looks at the seagulls, he suspects he knows the answer. Portal's moved, according to the readings, says Scott. It's not in the ocean anymore, it's up in the air about, well, about where all those seagulls are.
Yeah, I figured. I think the portal's messing with the birds' navigation.
What, do the birds have GPS that's on the fritz? Asks Hope, incredulous.
Kinda, yeah. They use the Earth's magnetic fields and shit, and I'm betting the portal's got their senses going haywire.
Can you, you know, help them out? Asks Bucky. Get the birds away and clear a path to the portal, so maybe Wanda can get the Kraken back through it?
Bucky's being vague, but Sam knows what he's alluding to. Sam's non-existent ability to talk to birds. Sam's still genuinely unsure about whether Bucky believes his bird superpower lie or not, and as he squints over at Bucky, he sees no hint that Bucky is poking fun at him right now, and Sam can't exactly call Bucky out about the possibility, not without blowing up his spot.
I'm not sure I can lift the sea monster. It's very large and thrashing so much, Wanda says.
You don't need to lift the Kraken, you just need to lift the water, says Sam. Give it a little boost. And I'll go, talk to the birds.
Sam has no idea how, exactly, he's going to handle the damn seagulls. If only he really could just direct them to safety like any other group of terrified civilians. Whatever, he'll wing it.
Maybe if he uses Red Wing as a kind of beacon?
He takes flight and heads for the wheeling and screeching mass of gulls, fiddling with Red Wing's programming along the way. Sam can't actually talk to birds, sure, but Red Wing can, kind of. Sam's ad hoc repurposing of Red Wing's EMP capability is clumsy. Hopefully, it'll still generate enough of a magnetic field to help get the seagull's sense of direction back online. He sends Red Wing on ahead into the vortex of seagulls and really hopes his half-ass plan works. Otherwise, he's probably about to get pecked and shat on by a bunch of seagulls. And that's if the Kraken doesn't get him first. It works, thankfully. Either the EMP hack or just the example of Sam and Red Wing flying get the seagulls out of their frantic vortex, because they follow Sam and Red Wing back to the beach, where they all promptly flap off to do normal asshole seagull things like ransacking people's picnics.
When Sam lands back on the beach with the rest of the team, Wanda's got her arms up and out, crimson magic pouring out of her hands towards the water.
Just, if you could do kind of a reverse flushing maneuver and get the Kraken up into the portal, Scott is saying, and then Wanda screams with effort and the water under the Kraken heaves up like a particularly large and localized wave, launching the Kraken up and through the portal. The water crashes back down with an enormous, roaring splash.
We should probably move, unless we want to get soaked, says Bruce, already backing up further along the beach, out of range of the big wave heading their way.
You should stay, maybe. Bucky tells Sam, you've got, seagull shit all over your wings.
What?
Sam extends his wings and twists to look at them, which is stupid, because of course he can't see the other side that way. Bucky's already jogging up the beach.
Some nice salt water will get that right off, probably,
calls out Hope cheerfully. Sam's still contorting himself and his wings to see if Bucky's telling the truth or not when the wave hits him at nearly chest height, knocking him off his feet and treating him to a face full of briny salt water. When he resurfaces, spluttering, a couple of seagulls circle over him, screeching, and Sam's pretty sure he's not imagining the faintly mocking tone of their calls.
That's the thanks I get for saving y'all's feathery asses,
he mutters. Then he heaves himself out of the water and clomps through the wet sand back towards his team.
Bird crap aside, you've got a real way with birds, says Bucky. Those gulls followed you right away.
Bucky's tone is mild, as is his expression. Yet Sam can't help but read a hint of goading in the minute lift of his eyebrows. Sam glares at Bucky and shakes off some of the sand that's swiftly getting lodged in uncomfortable places.
What did I tell you? I've got bird skills, Barnes. Me and birds, we understand each other. I asked them to follow me and they did.
Should have asked them not to crap on you, too, says Scott. Sam ignores him and recalls Red Wing to his position with a tap of his gauntlet.
Red Wing, he notes, has no bird shit on him.
Oh, the seagull spared you, huh? Sam says, rude.
Good job, though.
Tony's habit of talking to robots is spreading, I see, says Bruce.
Excuse you, Red Wing is more than a robot.
I thought Red Wing was a drone, says Hope. And I think this is more about Cap's habit of talking to birds.
Red Wing is more than a drone, too. Red Wing is a companion, and an important member of this team. Our literal eyes in the sky.
The whole team groans, and honestly, the disrespect. He's about to start in on listing all of Red Wing's many virtues, when Bucky says, well, I think Red Wing is pretty cool. And Sam smiles at him, surprised and vindicated, and maybe a little suspicious. Before any of them can keep the banter going, one of the coasties jogs over to them, and then it's time for yet another round of post-portal cleanup and reassurance.
Is the bird thing why you're so weird about Red Wing? Asks Bucky one too early morning when they're in the locker room gearing up for a mission.
What? I'm not weird about Red Wing.
Bucky cuts a speaking look his way.
Hey, Scott, is Sam weird about Red Wing?
Oh, yeah. Super weird, says Scott without missing a beat.
When Sam glares at him, he grins and gives Sam a thumbs up, like that's a thing people still do.
But cool. Super cool.
Bruce stomps by, looking slightly hulkier than usual, clearly grumpy to have been roused out of bed so early in the morning.
Bruce, is Sam weird about Red Wing?
Yeah, Red Wing's AI is really not advanced enough for the way you talk to it, Sam, says Bruce. Also, it's not a literal bird, so your whole inexplicable bird language knowledge thing shouldn't apply either. Bruce is still kind of annoyed that Sam will not let him test or in any fashion examine his non-existent ability to speak to birds. He does, however, still believe Sam. Everyone does. Sam can't quite decide if that's a sign of just how weird shit has gotten or his own innate trustworthiness. Sam hopes it's the former. Because if it's the latter, he's really going to start feeling bad about this whole thing.
Don't you listen to him, Red Wing,
Sam tells Red Wing as he locks the bird drone in place on the Falcon jetpack. He folds up pretty small and weighs barely anything, like he's a hollow-boned bird in truth, especially when Sam leaves the munitions off him like today.
You're the best robot bird companion a guy could ask for.
When Sam looks up after Red Wing's in place, Bucky's head is tilted at a considering sort of angle, a tiny, secret kind of smile on his lips,
and in the just visible appearance of the crow's feet around his eyes. Sam looks at Bucky.
What?
Nothing. It's just cute.
Hell yeah, Redwing's cute,
says Sam, a little mollified now.
Cute and deadly, like a kestrel.
The crow's feet at the corners of Bucky's eyes grow deeper.
Uh-huh. Just what I was thinking.
Sam suspects he's being made fun of in some manner now, but Sam can't bring himself to care. He lets Bucky check the straps and fit of his body armor, and then returns the favor, making sure the slightly popped collar of Bucky's neck guard is lying right, which necessitates his fingers brushing against the heat of Bucky's pulse point. Sam's fingers almost want to linger there. The morning is chilly, he supposes he really ought to wear gloves. But he adjusts the collar and steps back, surprised when he sees Bucky's eyes trained on him, too steady and intent for this usual pre-mission routine, a slight smile still making his lips curve up.
Okay, there, now you're battle ready,
says Sam and steps back, a flutter of nerves taking up residence in his stomach. Just pre-mission jitters, probably. After one look at the scene awaiting them in Culver University's main library, Sam says,
Oh, this is magic bullshit. This is 100% magic bullshit. So where the hell is Doctor Strange?
Because all the rare and priceless artifacts in the library's exhibit on ancient Simcarian jewelry are currently floating free of their secure displays, circling slowly around a blonde woman in a fancy green dress, who is also floating. She's examining each of the floating pieces of jewelry closely, like this is some kind of shopping trip, and she's looking for a specific necklace or whatever. But judging by the increasingly sharp waves of her hand and the speed with which the floating jewelry is moving, she's not finding it. The Spider Kid, who was the one who'd made this particular Avengers Assemble call in the first place, I was coming to the library to get some early studying in, but, there's this magic witch lady who's stealing stuff, so, Avengers Assemble, I guess? Does a kind of full-body wince and shrug, the weird big eyes of his spider suit surprisingly expressive. Yeah, I know, I tried calling Doctor Strange, but I guess he's in another dimension right now?
Jesus, the kid has really got to work on his uptalk problem. After a year, you'd think he'd be less nervous around all the Avengers, but no.
Is Doctor Strange literally ever in this dimension? Gripes Bruce.
All right, take up defensive positions, everyone. Let's try some conflict resolution first. See if we can avoid a big expensive fight in this nice library, Sam says.
Yeah, can we please not destroy the library? I study in here, like, all the time, says Parker.
Ma'am? Sam calls out. This is a museum exhibit, not a Tiffany's. The jewelry is not for sale. Can we help you with anything?
She stops examining the jewelry to send him an absolutely scathing look from over her shoulder.
She's pretty beautiful, long blonde hair fallen in shampoo commercial-style waves, green eyes, and that certain something that makes Sam think she's not as human as she looks. Asgardian, maybe. She's got that bigger-than-life quality.
No, you cannot, she says with haughty condescension. I'll be on my way once I find what I'm looking for.
Right. The thing is, ma'am, that these items are not for sale. They are priceless cultural relics of the Simcarian people. You can't just take them.
The woman laughs, a shockingly pretty sound.
Oh, that's cute, she coos. Just try to stop me.
So that's a no on the peaceful conflict resolution, says Bucky. I've got tranquilizers. Want me to give it a shot?
Maybe let Scarlet Witch take this one,
Sam says, eyeing the faint shimmer of green energy that's beginning to build around the woman.
Yes, she's using magic of some kind. Let me handle it for now, says Wanda, and the red tendrils of her power begin to coalesce around her hands. She narrows her eyes and smiles, and with a twitch of her fingers, all of the artifacts stop circling around the blonde, maybe Asgardian woman. This should stay between witches.
The woman whirls to face Wanda, her green eyes so bright they're practically glowing, her pretty face twisted into a snarl.
Excuse me? I am no common witch. I am a sorceress. I am Amora the Enchantress, greatest sorceress in all the nine realms.
Who are you calling common? Demands Wanda. And then it is on. The rest of them can't do much more than take cover and attempt to keep the artifact safe while the Sorceress versus Witch showdown rages. With the dueling red and green flashes of Amora and Wanda's power, the battle looks inappropriately festive, like some kind of Christmas fireworks show gone wrong.
So, like, just how priceless are these artifacts? Asks Scott breathlessly, as he shrinks then gets big to avoid getting hit by stray blasts of Amora's power. Because, I'm thinking we're not getting out of this one without a lot of property damage.
Anyone got a clear path to the Sorceress Lady? Sam asks, and is answered with a chorus of no's. Parker, can you web her?
I tried earlier before you guys got here, and no, but maybe now that she's distracted?
Parker shoots some of his web gunk at her, and Amora shrieks, wheeling around and dropping back to the ground when it lands. All of them try to press the advantage. Sam throws the shield. Wanda throws a blast of power. Bucky takes a couple shots with the Trank gun, but Amora lets loose a blast of magic, and none of their attacks land. The shield comes flying back at Sam, and the Trank darts are waved aside. Amora's ire seems to be reserved for the admittedly kind of gross web gunk Parker uses.
Oh, this one fancies himself a spider, she says viciously. Let's see how well you do as a spider in truth.
And then, with a flash of green light that almost looks like a lightning strike, Parker is replaced by a spider the size of a damn dog. And not a small dog, either, but like a Labrador.
Oh, that's just not right, Sam says as the spider, shit, that's probably Parker, waves two of his too many limbs.
How dare you, seethes Wanda, because she's pretty protective of Parker, and then the magic-on-magic fight is in full swing again. Sam orders Hope, Scott, and Bruce to fall back. There's no use keeping more people in the line of magical fire, not when they can't protect themselves against transformations. Meanwhile, Bucky's making a game attempt at getting Spider Peter to safety, though judging by the spooked expression on his face, Bucky's working real hard at not having a freakout about being in such close proximity to a giant spider. Sam would make fun of him for it, but his own hindbrain is shrieking at him about how he should kill it with fire, so he really can't judge. He shifts his attention back to the fight, where Wanda and Amora are still trading magical blows, and a lot of the artifacts are still careening around in the air, higher up now, towards the top of the library's high ceiling, as if Amora is playing a magical game of keep-away. Most of them only have the expected sheen and sparkle of precious metals and jewels, but there, high up near the library's skylight, one of the artifacts is glowing gently. It's a wide-cuffed silver bracelet with some sort of pale, moon-like jewel set in it. Safe bet that's what Amora is here for, Sam figures, so when he judges her distracted enough by the fight, he stows the shield on his back and takes flight to grab the bracelet. The bracelet is almost in reach when something yanks on Sam's wings. He tries to use his jetpack's thrust to break free, only for the force yanking him to fling him around to face Amora.
A man who thinks he can fly like a bird, she says, and the smile on her face makes Sam go cold. Oh, shit. A man who wants to be a bird, perhaps? Well, I can grant you that wish.
No, wait. But it's too late. His whole world shifts and shivers and shudders, and his body, he feels squeezed and stretched, and then abruptly lighter, impossibly light, and when he opens his eyes, when did he close them? Everything is different. His whole body is different. And he's falling, the shield and the EXO Falcon wings and Red Wing falling beside him. Sam! He hears someone call frantic, and he recognizes that voice. New instinct kicks in, and he flaps his wings. Real feathered wings, holy shit, as he tries to get his bearings. It's not easy. Everything about his senses is different, and his vision, all the colors have gone strange, and he could swear there are more of them, too. It's too much, and too many competing instincts clamor inside him to get to a high place, to get out, to protect his team and finish his mission, to hide, to fly and fly and never stop. Sam! Someone calls again, and he turns toward the voice, sees the gleam of gold, sunshine bright, and a flash of blue as clear as the sky. Bucky. It steadies him, enough that he remembers why he'd been in the air in the first place. The bracelet's still floating there, the battle between Wanda and Amora starting to tilt in Wanda's favor, judging by the amount of red energy in the air, and he flies up and up until he's at the skylight. Flying is so much easier like this, almost like he and the air are part of each other, and he takes a moment to revel in it. Only a moment, though, as he circles once, twice, and then he dives for the bracelet and snatches it out of the air. He wings straight towards Bucky from there and drops the bracelet into Bucky's gleaming vibranium hand, then perches on his forearm and grips it tightly with his talons. It doesn't feel like a good idea to be flying around right now, not with all that magic still being flung around. Also, he feels weird, and he really wants everything to just stop for a while.
"Yeah, okay," says Bucky, his right hand hovering protectively over Sam. "Just stay here with me, Sam. We'll fix this."
Sam sure hopes so. For now, he's too overwhelmed and confused, his bird thoughts beginning to overtake his human thoughts. And his bird thoughts tell him to tuck his beak into the feathers of his neck. So he does, and the dark is a comfort. Along with the murmur of Bucky's soft and steady voice, the light and gentle touch of his hand. Some time later, he doesn't know how long, the darkness changes to a gentle wash of red, and, like sliding into a warm pool of water, he's back in his human body again, Bucky's hands on his shoulders to steady him.
"Sam, you okay?" he asks, eyes wide and concerned.
"Yeah," Sam says, almost surprised to hear his own voice rather than the piercing call of some bird. For a moment, he feels the weight of his now solid bones keenly, feels the pull of gravity, the warmth and solidity of Bucky's hands on his shoulders. He misses the wings, maybe, but all in all, Sam prefers being human.
"Parker, is he?"
He turns, looking for Parker, and sees Wanda helping him to his feet, human again, with the normal number of limbs and eyes, thank fuck.
"Amora's gone," reports Wanda.
"But she didn't get what she wanted, and we're all the right species, which probably makes this a success."
"Yeah, okay. Sam will take that win. Sure."
"Yay," says Sam.
"Go team."
Doctor Strange shows up not long after, which seems like too little too late, to be honest, and Sam's about to tear him a new one for it, because, seriously, he has got to be more reliably available when the Avengers need him. But Strange takes one look at the bracelet, declares it the Sorcerer Supreme's business, and takes it, before promptly stepping through a portal again.
"You better do the damn paperwork for that," Sam calls after him,
then sighs and resigns himself to a long day of cleanup and conciliatory conversations with libraries and curators.
"You sure you're all right?"
asks Bucky, eyeing him with wary concern, as if feathers are going to sprout out of his back at any moment.
"Yeah, I'm good," says Sam, then adds, thanks for, you know, keeping an eye on Birdme."
"Sure, yeah, of course. Partners, right?" Sam nods, relieved that they can leave it at that.
"Hey, what kind of bird was I, anyway?" he asks.
Bucky smiles, and it's a new kind of smile, one Sam's not sure he's seen on Bucky's face yet. Fond, but oddly wry, too.
I haven't got your bird skills, but I'm pretty sure you were a falcon, like you were ever going to be anything else."
That makes a funny kind of heated and pleased shiver race down Sam's spine, a zing of surprise and happiness, because, yeah, falcons are one of Sam's favorite birds, and his call sign is important to him, so he smiles back at Bucky.
"I don't know, I'm Captain America now. I could have been a bald eagle."
"Nah, no way. You made a really cute falcon, though."
"Cute? Excuse you. Ferocious raptors are not cute."
Bucky laughs, and as they walk out of the library into the bright afternoon, Sam doesn't miss hollow bird bones and real wings at all. Not when he feels this light in his own familiar human body.